Should we slate?
We should slate.
Let's do it.
Okay, this is Paul McCartney, A Life in Lyrics, Maxwell Silver, Hammer episode in 3, 2, 1.
Untitled Beatles Podcast.
Wait a minute, that's not Tony slating. Are the internet rumors true? Did he quit?
Due to HR obligations, I'm not allowed to talk about internal personnel decisions at the moment. But needless to say, he just didn't feel up to the slate today. So I thought I'd drop in and help provide some slate support.
Thank you, Casey.
Well, thanks for your slate support. I hope you give me some slade support one day. That's the second runaway reference. And the problem with the show, as many of you know, producer Casey, is that the bits repeat themselves. And yeah, I'm so excited that today we get to present, like, working with Pushkin. Get up on this. I think that's only from the dance remix of Push It, by the way, when Salt and Pepper say,
editor's note for our editor.
Get up on this. I think I have it, so I'll give it to you. It's really great to partner with these lovely people who are producing some actual, even if you've read the lyrics books, which I haven't made my way through all of it. I've been doing it like in piecemeal select songs. You still learn things in the podcast that aren't in the book. So it's not just a compendium. This whole series is more illuminating than I expected when it was announced.
Absolutely. And it feels, for folks who aren't aware, what we're talking about is the Paul McCartney, Paul Muldoon collaboration podcast called McCartney, A Life in Lyrics, put out by iHeartMedia, MPL, and Pushkin. Baby. Yeah. And to me, it feels like maybe a little bit more of the straight version of our show. It's sort of like the apotheosis of what we do. Like, we do the
Why is he
asshole.
Using elitist college words? I'm drinking a Bud Light with Old Style mixed in from yesterday. Well, I want to hear that one.
I'll try that again. It's the good version of what we do. We're the asshole. We're the drunk guy at the end of the bar shouting about the Beatles. And this is the actual, you know, real deal with Paul McCartney and Paul Muldoon. It's mined from the audio that they recorded together as they were compiling the lyrics book. Yeah. And as you mentioned, they can obviously, that must just be such a treasure trove. Imagine how many hours they have of just getting to riff with Paul McCartney and talk to him about the poetry of his language.
It's pretty brilliant. Right, Tony? What do you think?
That's what they say about Paul McCartney.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well articulated, Tony. I think that's a great point. That's a great point.
I'm thrilled with the amount of participation you're giving us in this episode. Take it, Tony.
Take it, Tony.
Yeah, I agree with you guys.
So today we have another opportunity to share one of these episodes, thanks to the fine folks at Pushkin.
Push it real good.
They're actually helping promote our show as well. So you might hear, if you're listening to A Life in Lyrics or any of the shows across the Pushkin network, you might hear a promo for the Untitled Beatles podcast. So we appreciate the fine folks at Pushkin. Thanks for partnering with us. And TJ, what episode will we be hearing in the feed today?
We are going to be hearing the episode on arguably John, George, and Ringo's favorite Beatle track, Maxwell's Silver Hammer.
Yes, we are, and we'll be back at the end to recap, but first, let's have a listen.
I happen to be driving up to Liverpool in my brand new Aston Martin, going too fast. With the radio on, and there was this play that caught my ear.
Is the shit a pump out of order? Answer me or I'll have you de-brained.
Dubu Kaku. I really liked it.
It's not functioning at all. It's broken down.
Because it was so rebellious.
What a dirty business, like your de-braining machine.
I just loved this character, Ubu.
I'm not afraid of that. There's nothing like a sewage barrel.
I liked, hand me my shitter pump, Mayor Ubu. And I thought, that is good. Shitter pump. And just the image that conjured up. These always little dirty things appeal to me when people are rude. And I say, I went up the whole of the journey listening to this.
Barrel, pumpkin, refuse of humanity.
I'm Paul Muldoon. For a while now, I've been fortunate to spend time with one of the greatest songwriters of our era.
And will you look at me? I'm going on tour. I'm actually a performer.
That is Sir Paul McCartney. We worked together on a book looking at the lyrics of more than 150 of his songs. And we recorded many hours of our conversations.
It was like going back to an old snapshot album, looking back on work I hadn't ever analysed.
This is McCartney, A Life in Lyrics, a masterclass, a memoir, and an improvised journey with one of the most iconic figures in popular music. In this episode, Maxwell Silverhammer.
Two, three. G, G, B, B, E minor.
Well, it's a story song, you know. It's one of my story songs. And I think I'm kind of unique in the Beatles for doing them. Because if you look at George's songs, they're always very autobiographical. It's very something he thinks. My Sweet Lord, you know, Here Comes the Sun. And mine's influenced, I think, by that period of intense literature. This is why I do story songs, where someone is making, a writer is putting himself in the position of a person. Mm-hmm. It's the imagination that I like. So with things like Maxwell Silverhammer, I like the idea of making up people. Dramatic personae.
Joan was quizzical, studied metaphysical science in the home. Late nights all alone with a test tube. Oh, oh, oh.
The lyric, studied metaphysical science in the home, is a rather obscure reference to the work of the French playwright Alfred Jarry, whose play Ubu Koku McCartney heard on his car radio. Jarry is often considered a forefather of Dadaism and Surrealism, and he once described his made-up discipline of pataphysics as the science of imaginary solutions.
I got round to Jarry and pataphysics, and you know, I had friends, there was a guy, Barry Miles, and he was very bookish. He looked bookish. He started the Indica bookstore with a couple of others. I used to just go around to his house and we would just have dinner and we would just talk. So with Jarry, we would talk about what pataphysics was, and he was more knowledgeable than I would say, well, it wasn't. It was a made-up science. Right. Mm-hmm. And he had the chair of pataphysics and he had a pataphysical society.
Remember that you are addressing a celebrated pataphysician. Excuse me, sir. You said pataphysician. Pataphysics is a branch of science which we have invented and for which a crying need is generally experienced. Oh, but you see, if you're a famous inventor, we'll understand each other, for between great men, a little more modesty, sir. Besides, I see no great man here except myself. But since you insist, I have condescended to do you a most significant honor. Let it be known to you, sir, that your establishment suits us and that we have decided to make ourselves at home here.
I was just fascinated by the surrealism of it and the madness of it all, you know. So that, I was very happy to get the rhyme, quizzical and pataphysical. And then Joan, so we just started with a Joan. Okay, we've got a character.
Joan. Studied
I like the way it goes, studied pataphysical science in the home.
Yes.
I mean, science in the home is almost like a title. So I like this. And then when it's like all alone with a test tube, there's something a bit sort of surreal but suggestive.
Late nights all alone with a test tube. Oh, oh, oh.
Well, the test tube, of course, at that point, the notion of the test tube baby was probably, you know, very much to before at that point, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And also, if I'm going to talk about science, for me, my experience of science was pipettes and test tubes.
Right.
And
Bunsen burners.
Bunsen burners, yeah. No. All those wonderful things.
Maxwell Edison, majoring in medicine, calls her on the phone. Can I take you out to the pictures, John?
The name of the song's anti-hero might have come from James Clerk Maxwell, the Scottish scientist who developed the classical theory of electromagnetism. And Maxwell's surname, Edison, must have come from the inventor Thomas Edison.
I just love the rhyme.
Edison.
Yeah. As I loved quizzical, metaphysical.
Maxwell Edison, majoring in medicine, calls her on the phone.
We'll return after these messages.
Solozzi Edelson Chevrolet is number one in sales because of our guaranteed sales policy.
You want the best price and the greatest selection.
So we offer over 1,500 new cars and trucks ready for immediate delivery.
We offer low-rate financing to qualified buyers.
Plus, we guarantee you'll save more money on any new car or truck, or we'll give you back the difference in cash.
At Solozzi Edelson Chevrolet in Elmhurst at York and Roosevelt Roads.
Where you always save more money.
Boy, I know something Cookie doesn't know. Hey, Cookie!
Yeah, what's up, Bob?
Say, Cookie, what is sometimes a semi-truck and sometimes a robot?
Whoa, that's Optimus Prime, the leader of the Autobots, who battled the Decepticons, and they're the Transformers.
Yeah, but did you know, Cookie, that
the Transformers is one of the great cartoons on the Bozo Show, weekday mornings at 7 o'clock on Channel 9?
Okay, Smarty.
Oh, no.
Out to the pictures, John.
When the Beatles were recording Maxwell's Silver Hammer and the rest of Abbey Road, they were experimenting with their own science, that of music production.
This coincided with the visit to Abbey Road of Robert Moog.
Oh, yes.
The inventor of the
synthesizer.
And no one had seen synthesizers. This was the very first.
Was that the first
time?
Was it?
And they took up a whole room. It was a huge thing, and it filled the whole wall of the room.
Here's the journalist Derek Cooper introducing the new instrument on television.
It's called the Moog synthesizer. It produces sounds in a matter of minutes, which would normally take radiophonic experts with their complicated equipment days of work and multiple re-recording to achieve.
George Martin was always very keen on these technological innovations. You probably find he knew Robert Moog. Anyway, Moog had come over, Abbey Road, show us this Moog thing. And I was fascinated, and he would show us how to get these sounds from the warp. But it took a little longer than other normal songs took. Not crazy compared by today's standards.
Sure.
But by those standards, relatively long time by the standards of the day.
But as she's getting ready to go, a knock comes on the door.
As we get to the chorus of the song, it shifts from a wholesome romance between the pataphysicist Joan and her medical suitor to a much more violent story.
Bang, bang, Maxwell's silver hammer came down upon her head.
And so now, you know, this is like noir cinema, noir. I like the idea that we were all cozy and she's just a scientist and it's a little bit of fun and he's a doctor studying medicine student, medical student. But now he's going to kill her.
Bang, bang, Maxwell
silver hammer made sure that she was dead.
It's serial murderer in some ways.
Yeah, he is a serial murderer. Yeah. Now we've got into a much darker world.
Back in school again, Maxwell plays the fool again. Teacher gets annoyed, wishing to avoid an unpleasant scene. She tells Max to stay when the class has gone away, so he waits behind, writing 50 times, I must not be so, oh, oh, oh.
Writing 50 times, I must not be so. 50 lines was a standard punishment in detention.
Right.
I must not talk in class. And I was always doing that. I was often in detention.
I must not be so, whatever it was, so naughty, so... Was that part of it?
Yeah, I must not be so.
Uh-huh.
I don't need to say the naughty.
But when she turns her back on the boy, he creeps up from behind. Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver hammer came down upon her head.
To accentuate the shock of the deadly silver hammer, the chorus incorporated clangs of a hammer hitting an anvil. Though it's contested, Ringo Starr likely did all the percussion for the recording, including that anvil. However, it was Mal Evans, the band's tour manager, who banged the hammer in rehearsals.
Bang, bang, Maxwell's silver hammer made sure that she was dead. Take it away, Johnny.
I mean, isn't Bang Bang Maxwell's Silver Hammer, it's not without its humour, and it conjures up...
Yeah.
It conjures up for me a fairground. Do you remember that thing where they used to...
Yeah,
is that part of what's going on?
Test your own strength.
Yes.
I don't know. To me, the silver hammer is like a medical thing.
Okay.
It's a little bit ominous.
I see. Like it's the kind of thing you used to knock your knee with or something?
Knee, yeah.
To see what your reflexes
silver,
were?
I'm thinking like sort of chrome in my head, you know. Silver hammer. He's a medical student.
Medical student.
He's got this sort of hammer that, yeah.
But, I mean, it is a violent image of something coming to an end.
It is extremely violent, but that's the thing, isn't it? Like surrealism. That's what happens. You get a very ordinary scene, and then, bang! It's a dramatic device as well, you know. So, and I don't know why I wanted to do a sort of dark comedy. It's like a sort of dark comedy, because it is a comedy.
EC31 said we caught a dirty one. Maxwell stands alone, painting testimonial pictures. Oh, 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 oh.
You know, PC31, there was a PC49 when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
It was a character...
Yeah, what was that in?
I think he was possibly on the radio.
Ah, I remember that.
PC-49.
And leave instructions at the deck that I want to see PC-49 as soon as he comes on tomorrow.
I will, sir.
Excuse me, Sarge. This sergeant sent me out with this message for the DDI.
What is it, Constable?
The Adventures of PC-49 was a popular post-war radio series produced by the BBC. The show followed the everyday sleuthing of Police Constable Archibald Barclay Willoughby as he investigated cheating gamblers and other crimes on the cold streets of London.
Say, what if the police raid this place?
They won't, sir. Still, we've got even that organised. A system of warning bells and two tough boys on the door to delay them.
This old-time noir radio show might have inspired the character gallery and setting of McCartney's song.
Rose and Valerie screaming from the gallery say he must go free. The judge does not agree and he tells them so. Oh, oh.
Rose and Valerie screaming from the gallery, he must go free. So, I mean, he's got his supporters and it's like, uh-oh. Don't support him too much, girls, because he'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's all a little bit ominous, you know, a little bit sort of dark.
But as the words are leaving his lips, a noise comes from behind.
I like the idea of playing with them. I like the idea of giving them a story.
Right, or seeing what they come up with, I suppose.
Yeah, awesome. Just, you know, and then, you know, putting Valerie in the gallery.
A joyous song. I mean, it has this dark undertow, but it has, you know,
which it's tongue, you know, it's tongue-in-cheek, you know that it's not a real story. This is not Dateline, you know, this is made up, and I think that's the sort of joy of it. It's like a children's nursery rhyme, you know, chop chop off your head. It's a big tradition of that stuff. You know, nursery rhymes are always chopping off people's heads.
They are.
Humpty Dumpty's always dropping and cracking. So there is this thing of where we kind of like, because we can place it in a safe place and we can enjoy the macabre aspect because we know it's not real, it's not a news story.
There's certainly a mix of playfulness and darkness at the core of Maxwell's Silver Hammer. Despite the lightheartedness of the melody, the band's recording sessions for the song weren't quite so light. The other three Beatles publicly said they didn't like the track. Ringo Starr even said it was the worst song they ever recorded. Really, their frustration was less about the song itself and more about McCartney's admitted perfectionism in the studio.
And I was very keen on it. It took a little bit long to record. I remember the guys getting pissed with me. Occasionally, I in particular would take too long because I was trying to get what was in my head.
I was just going to ask you about how, at this stage, how does it work?
Recording sessions were always good because no matter what our personal troubles were, no matter what was sort of going down, the minute we sat down to make a song, we were good.
Well done, boys.
Our sort of skills came out. And so I think we all enjoyed being in this little skillful company where Ringo would do that and George would play that and John would do that, which was slightly more eccentric, and I would do that on bass or piano or whatever. So there was a great joy there.
Maxwell's Silver Hammer from the Beatles' 1969 album, Abbey Road. In the next episode... Yesterday, one of the most covered songs in music history.
Yesterday, suddenly.
That's next time on McCartney, A Life in Lyrics. McCartney, A Life in Lyrics is a co-production between iHeartMedia, MPL, and Pushkin Industries.
Wow, Casey!
Hey. Yeah, right?
Who knew? Now, in fairness, I've not heard the Abbey Road album. As you know, my Beatle fandom ends with the Tony Sheridan thing. I just like the early stuff.
Right. And you don't want to take away from Tony's deep love of Abbey Road. So you give him, you give that album to him to really relish. Right, Tony?
Now that's something I can get behind.
It's like Tony once said, I love how rough hewn Abbey Road sounds.
Yeah, raw.
It's like they're Zeppelin one. Zeppelin won, Bon Jovi lost, classic rock fans. Our next debate. Don't play Bon Jovi on classic rock stations, America. Pushkin, if you're involved with this, I know iHeartRadio is, but don't play Bon Jovi on classic rock.
I don't think that's too much to ask. Keep him confined to adult contemporary or maybe contemporary Christian music where he belongs.
So at any rate, back to Paul and Paul, Muldooney, McCartney. Yeah, this, what a great episode. I have never heard this song talked about as in-depth as it is here. It's almost it would be comical if it weren't so interesting.
Yes, absolutely. It's so bizarre to hear two grown men, a scholar and a, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, first ballot inductee, talking so seriously about Maxwell's fucking Silverhammer.
Yeah, and the Ruddles-esque seriousness and complexities, yes, with which they discuss the darkness of this song is great. Listening to hear Paul talk about it is really neat and special. And we don't need to talk about spoilers because you've just heard it. But I kept wondering, when do they talk about the other guys not liking this? When do they talk about the and it's toward the very end of the episode. And they give it, Casey, they give it a bit of now and then treatment where it's like, In the 90s and up through George's passing, he didn't like the song Now and Then. And then after they decided they wanted to put it on the Blue album, all of a sudden, no, George did like the song. He didn't like the cassette tape.
He didn't like the recording quality.
Right. And this is a little bit of it too. No, it's not the guys didn't like the song. They didn't like that Paul was a perfectionist. Well, two things can be true.
Well, you know, funny you bring it up because Maxwell Silverhammer, one of the more derided songs in the Beatles canon. If you go back to our Ranking the Beatles episode, NME had it ranked at 149, the most generous of the rankings. And then I believe, Tony, where did you have it?
I don't know about that.
I actually looked it up, though. Tony, I believe you had it at 173.
Thank you, Casey.
And then TJ, you had it at 178 out of what, like 182 or something like that? It's like bottom five.
Well, here's the thing. I overcompensate for my love of McCartney by deriding this song too much so I can get away with loving like Wanderlust too much. I love
it. It gives you your cred. It gives you your McCartney cred.
No, I don't like this. No, this, I still put this above She's Leaving Home, and that's a song everybody but me loves.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't get it.
So knowing it's so derided, having heard this episode and a little bit of the backstory, does it change? Does it inflect at all how you feel about the song?
What a great question. Not necessarily. And the proof is in the pudding of Paul McCartney bringing out so many songs from his catalog when he finally brought Beatles songs back with the Big Wings tour in 76. This certainly wasn't one of them. It wasn't one when they toured then again in 89 and 90 or 93 or even the 2000s when he's bringing up, you know, all of a sudden in 2002, he's opening with Hello Goodbye. That was novel at the time. He's yet to put Maxwell's Silverhammer in any live setting. It's not difficult to reproduce live. So I think Paul probably thinks of this song the way many of us do, too. It is part of what many would consider one of the top three Beatles albums of all time. It is certainly a fun song. It is not a bad song. But again, it's the litmus test. Do you want to hear this song or do you want to hear Fool on the Hill or Lady Madonna? You know, like there are many, many other Paul McCartney songs you probably want to actively put on than Maxwell's Silverhammer.
Agreed. And have you ever put Maxwell's Silverhammer on a mixtape?
I have never put it on a mixtape. I've never put it on a mix CD. I've never put it on a playlist. I don't cringe when it comes on Abbey Road, but I'm not desperately seeking out to hear, I'm desperately seeking Susan. There's an 85 Madonna reference. I don't know if I got the year right. But yeah, without question, this is a lesser Beatles song that this podcast somehow makes feel more important. Doesn't change how my gut feels about it, but like every song in this series, hearing Paul talk about a classic composition from a legendary album, yeah, it's great. It's a bloody Beatles, it's sold. Shut up.
Yeah, I think that's legit. You know, it's this funny music hall show tune, classic Paul McCartney and storyteller character mode about a serial killer, which I feel like through 2024 lenses, part of me is like, oh man, whimsical violence feels weirder today maybe than it did at the time. But one of the things I think the episode really illuminated for me, they talk about how he's inspired by the Alfred Jarry plays, the Ubu series, which I don't know how familiar, they probably don't do those at Second City too often, but have you seen any or read any of those plays?
I was totally unfamiliar, and this episode gave me a lot of information about that and also connected it to Paul's radio show, Ubu Jubu, which I'd never considered either.
Okay, welcome to the show, Ubu Jubu this week, fun fact show, item number one.
Yeah, right. To know that he was inspired by it, it's like, I think 19th century French theater. You know, I was a theater major. One of my favorite parts of theater school was learning about the Ubu plays. They're super, you know, he calls them, I think, Dadaist. But to me, they were like punk rock. They're super scatological. And putting it in that context, you know, I'm not going to say Maxwell Silverhammer is punk rock. I'm just saying it gave what I thought was a throwaway weird ditty about murder a little more weight, a little more gravitas.
Yes, it certainly intellectualized the macabre destruction of this yeah. murderous song. And it's true. It is dark. I mean, this is probably one of the darkest songs. You know, screw Run for Your Life. Maxwell Silverhammer is now the most violent song in the Beatle canon. It always was, obviously. But so, yes, that's a great point. And that connection to the absurdist nature of this being kind of punk rock is very cool, Casey. And it also, he mentioned Barry Miles in this episode, his buddy who kind of turned Paul on to a lot of that stuff and then wrote many years from now the great biography of Paul in the 90s, I think, early 2000s. I got the big hardcover of it. But yeah, this song will never be considered, I think, by most Beatle fans as being one of McCartney's greatest. But even one of Paul's not great songs deserves this discussion and is still one of the great, great compositions on a rock album.
Yeah, it's like you've mentioned a couple times, I think, on the show that it's like Paul on a Bad Day is like the lead single on any other band's track.
Yes.
Or any other band's album, rather.
Yes, it's absolutely true. I mean, this song, it's tuneful, it's unexpected. Is it cloying? Sure, but lots of music hall show tunes are cloying. It doesn't make them badly written. It's got cool changes, the percussive element. I learned on this episode, I learned that it was not Mal play. I know there's a lot of Beatle fans rolling their eyes about me being stupid, and that's fair. Mm-hmm, I did not know that wasn't Mal on the original track. The original Let It Be movie so burned into my brain that I just... And Mal plays on Beatles tracks.
Sure.
So right. I just it's assumed like, it's Ringo right. on the track.
I think a lot of us did, yeah. And, you know, more on that to come soon in our seventh Beatle bracket, celebrating the musicians of the Beatles universe. Mal Evans may or may not make an appearance. Is he a musician? Is he a roadie? Tune in to find out.
Mal Evans, random touring members of Beatlemania, Yoko, on the next Beatle Madness. What are we calling it? Seventh Beatle bracket.
There it is.
So, yes.
Get rid of the piano. So annoying.
Last night, I was after I had re-listened to the episode I've heard a couple times, re-listened to the song in headphones, gave the 2019 remaster another spin. I invited my wife. I was like, hey, do you want to listen to Maxwell Silverhammer with me? I kind of need to get in touch with it. And she was like, no, thank you. I'm good. I'm listening to a podcast. And I asked her quick. I was like, well, what do you think about Maxwell Silverhammer? And she's like, I have to say, that's my least favorite Ringo song.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is the best encapsulation. And I was like, excuse me. That's not a Ringo song. And she thought for 2 seconds. She's like, oh my God, I know it isn't. Now that I listen in my head, I hear it. But to me, it's spiritually a Ringo song.
It could be. And yet, yep. This is an album where let's take Octopus's Garden over Maxwell's Silver Hammer. If we're going to... Your wife's right. got a point. If we are going to rank every single song on Abbey Road, yes. Yeah, we're going to take the actual Ringo song over the song that sounds like a Ringo song. Yes.
Exactly. Right. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. One day we'll re-rank the tracks to see if this helped. TJ, do you think it's going to nudge it up? Or do you imagine this coming in at 178 for you?
I don't. I'll probably think of it a little higher now that I know more about it and it's more top of mind. But again, it doesn't negate the fact that I said earlier that Paul's never done it live. You know, I mean, there's plenty of opportunities for him to do this.
Yep.
He had a new blood dia blood da. That's another sing-along-y thing. He's also never done Your Mother Should Know live, at least. I'm 99.9% sure of that.
I mean, it's not much of a rocker. You're doing like a big arena show. Do you want to go with Your Mother Should Know?
Over Dance Tonight, maybe.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, God bless the early proto iPod. One thing I do want to mention before we go here, Casey, a couple of interesting things that I pulled from the episode. PC-49, is that the original P3Z Nuts? I wanted to think about that.
Oh, fuck right off. There is only one, and will only ever be one P3Z Nuts.
And I'm Tony.
I love that he says this is not Dateline when he talks about the song being satirical. Like, is Paul watching a lot of MSNBC on the weekends? I'm sure he is, actually.
I mean, such a timely thing, especially with the blow up of true crime podcasts and true crime TV. I think that was an apt comparison. It's definitely not Dateline.
Right. And I think he was saying that that's to the darkness of it. There's a light touch of satire, which I think is really neat.
Yes.
And there is also, I love hearing Paul McCartney say the word macabre. Makes me very happy. And lastly, the most important takeaway, a very Paul comment he makes that I really hit my heart, where he says, no matter what our personal relationships were, when we sat down to make a song, we were good. It's very Paul talking about some of the stress of his perfectionism while recording this. And they sat down to record and they still make this tight with the Moog, this beautifully arranged tune that I'm liking more as I talk about it. Fuck, Paul, you're doing it to me again.
Maybe a little McCartneyism there too, right? Is like, yeah, that's probably spiritually true, but I'd be curious to know if George and Ringo felt the same. Is like, yeah, were we always good when we were recording? Like, I bet there were a couple takes that they maybe wanted to be in a different room.
Well, and so much they play the rehearsal of this from the original Let It Be movie that I had, you know, I've seen for so long that I right away I'm like, oh yeah, that's in the movie Let It Be. And they're not happy there. I mean, you see obviously many moments of this in Get Back where in the first part where they are just, they're despondent and they're not into the song. So rose-colored glasses now for sure, but that's where the Beatles story is headed. Everything's through rose-colored glasses now, and maybe it's not a bad thing. Right, Tony?
That's what they say about the Beatles.
Couldn't have said it better.
So next week, Tony and Casey, we have an episode that's a little bit similar to this, only it's produced in-house. Remember that show? My mom, God bless her, God rest her soul, had a crush on the actor who played House for like 10 years on Fox's
House MD,
medical drama
one?
House. Yeah, that was a big crush for my mom.
I feel like everybody's mom liked that show. Yeah, Hugh Laurie. Yeah, right. Yeah. Great British stage actor. Never saw the show.
Never saw it. That's kind of when I stopped watching TV on regular television.
Right. I can't remember. Tony, did you watch that one?
I agree with you guys.
So again, what should we expect next week, TJ?
Next week, we have found lost footage akin to the two Pauls, Muldoon and McCartney. Great law firm, by the way. We found hours of footage recorded in late 2022, where I had just received the Paul McCartney singles box set, and Tony and I listen to various 45s from the box set and analyze the McCartney box reissue as only Muldooney McCartney 2 can do.
Amazing. And so you do all 80 singles in one sitting, and that's what we got next week?
That's Tony moved in for a year and a half. Was it weird in our wives? Sure. But then they fell in love too. Right, Tony?
Thank you, TJ.
Hey, Tony, what do you think of this?
Get rid of the piano. And I'm Tony.
And please like and subscribe, not just to this fine podcast, the Untitled Beatles Podcast, which, by the way, we maybe didn't mention at any point in this show. But if you're listening, you probably know this is the Untitled Beatles Podcast. Find us at UntitledBeatlesPodcast.com. Check us out on Patreon. We're on Facebook, Instagram. We've got a Discord for our Patreon members. Check that out. And also, please check out, if you haven't already, more of the Muldoon McCartney A Life in Lyrics. You can find that podcast wherever you listen to this one.
You can also buy it. They have a premium version. You can listen on any pod. You can find a fake VPN that says you're in another country and just rip everything for free.
Exactly. Steal Paul McCartney's podcast. I think that's what we meant to say.
I mean, that's the Untitled Beatles Podcast. And I'm Tony.
Untitled Beatles Podcast. Like and subscribe.